Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This is the Yanks Go Yard podcast with Adam Weinrib and Thomas Carinante.
Welcome in to the Yanks Go Yard podcast. I'm Adam Weinrib alongside Thomas Carinante. Man, it's awesome. The Yankees have played the Twins twice this week. They won the first one 5-1, got some much needed insurance in the bottom of the eighth. They won the second one 9-5, I believe was the final score, but that's not an appropriate final score for that game. It's, in fact, a deeply strange one, and it's all Dennis Santana's fault. Right now is a very fun time in the fandom. We get to drill down on being angry about one man occupying a misused roster spot. Sometimes we get to scroll through the roster and go, Jamai Jones has been here since opening day. He has 8 at-bats. What's going on? Are we sure the Yankees' consistency in the lineup to that degree is actually a good thing? Should we have bench pieces who play more than that? Either way, not arguing. This team has won 7 straight for the second time this year, for the second time within a month. It feels awesome. Carlos Rodon was incredible in this series. Luis Gil is the current Cy Young favorite. I mean, he's not. I guess that's Tarek Skubal, but damn close, and he showed the Twins what they're missing. They gave him up for Jake Cave, never forget. Cole started this week as well, down at Somerset. Did everything that anyone could have possibly asked of him. I'd love to hear an update on how his arm has bounced back, but so far the indications are pretty good. We're going to be talking about what we've seen in the Twins series so far. The encouraging signs from Cole, an interesting bit of timing on a top prospect getting promoted to AAA. The Yankees ticket office preparing for the Dodger fan takeover that they want to be coming this weekend, but presumably will not be coming. And a couple of Yankees who still deserve more love during this hot stretch. Thanks for joining us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, as well as live every Monday and Thursday, 2 o'clock Eastern. We'll be right back here next Monday as well, recapping that Dodger series. Here joining me as always, Thomas Carinante, who's got an offer first from our sponsors.
What's up, everyone? Thanks for tuning in. DraftKings is here. What do you know? Offering a fantastic sign-up bonus for new users. New users, new users. New customers can place a $5 first bet on any sport and instantly claim $150 in bonus bets. And all you got to do is sign up with our code YanksGoYard. YanksGoYard. The best part is that you will receive these rewards even if that first bet loses. Doesn't matter the outcome. Just get in there. Get in on the action. Reap the rewards. Using our code YanksGoYard not only gets you these bonuses, but it also directly supports the podcast. These two great co-hosts, YanksGoYard.com. Come on. We're having fun. So if you've been considering signing up for DraftKings or you know somebody who wants to sign up, get on to it. Make sure to use that code YanksGoYard to maximize those first bets. This offer is only available to new customers who are 21 and older and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly. Check the episode description for full terms of the offer to see if you qualify. Bang! If you're betting on the Yankees lately, lucrative. Also just feeling good in general. I relaxed. I know the Twin. Look, we like to laugh. The Twins come to town. We wipe the floor with them no matter where it is. But this Twins team is good. We had this discussion a couple weeks ago when we were in Minnesota. Yep. Coming off the heels of a 7-2 road trip on the West Coast. No easy feat for the Yankees. They come back home, swipe the first two games of this series, another series victory, and couldn't be rolling any better into this Dodgers weekend set, which, again, haven't really paid any attention to. Not going to pay any attention to it until tomorrow morning probably, because I'm loving – all the action. It's crazy what just a semi-competent baseball team can do. If the Yankees had, honestly, I think if the Yankees had like 8 fewer wins, I would still feel the same. Like we're getting quality at bats. They're getting timely hits. They're getting high energy performances. Last night to me, like the crowd, man, I want the crowd like that most nights. And they were trying, we were trying so hard to be that active, to be that vocal when you're attending a game, and the last few years just made it really difficult to do that. You're like waiting for the stadium to implode because no one's getting that big hit. No one's getting that big strikeout. And now this year it's like we're having overload, sensory overload. All the good shit's happening at once. We're trying to process it as it comes. So now we've flipped the tone year over year, really last 4 years over 1 year. So it's good to kind of be in this spot. I know at times over the last few seasons, we've been in good places in terms of performances, but again, different feel, different energy. You're seeing the reactions from the fans. You're seeing the camaraderie with the players and how they've been handling the moment. So yeah, just another golf clap for this team. It's really incredible what we're witnessing.
It's nuts. And people are going to, as always, go, the Twins, Yankees own the Twins. I mean, yes, you're right. They do own the Twins, but
fine,
this
cool
level of 22 years of ownership. I mean, yeah, that's, at some point, like every bout of ownership turns around. That's an insane amount. Every single series you go, well, it's got to turn around at some point. And then it never does. And the Yankees have won another series from the Twins, a Twins team that is quite good and is among the better Twins teams during that stretch. But there have been plenty of good ones. That's the weirdest part. This is not the Yankees pantsing the late 90s Devil Rays over and over again. This is a Twins team that makes the playoffs 40% of the time. During that chunk of time when the Yankees have just entered another series with them, maybe the Twins have the pitching mismatch this time. Maybe the Twins have the momentum. Maybe the Twins are at home, and then the Yankees take a couple games. And it's like, hey, we did it again. So in planning for the Dodgers series, you're like, this is kind of a tough one. You know, Heel, you expect big things. Rodon, the metrics. Oh, the metrics. I mean, you check the stuff under the hood and it indicates that there's room for some regression there. He's not getting as many strikeouts as he did in his prime. He's striking out about a batter per inning, which he did last year. It's not like the metrics say Rodon 8-2 with a low 3 ZRA should be 4-6 with a high fives, but it says he should be in the mid fours and he's going to be battling that. At some point, he's going to have a bad start, but it wasn't yesterday. You could have seen it, you know, strong Twins lineup. Coming off that Heel game, could have easily blown up in his face yesterday, could have led to a rubber match on Thursday. Didn't happen. Yankees won again. Yankees took care of more business, and it leaves us just arguing about Dennis Santana's value in the very last roster spot because could have won that game 9-0. Could have won that game 9-2. I mean, it's a 9-5 game because we get a guy throwing batting practice when it expands to 9-2, and it got sweaty. If you're the kind of person who sweats out giant blowouts, e.g. me, I don't want to be that guy, but I was a little sweaty in the eighth inning yesterday. You can't give up a hit to every single batter you face. That's a rule of winning baseball games. If you're protecting a lead, the lead will eventually go away if every batter gets a hit off you. So I had my eye on that. When Kyle Farmer doubled, I was like, well, that's interesting. It feels like every single batter's getting a hit. This could end poorly. Didn't end poorly. Yankees win again. And now we're set up for whatever happens in the finale on Thursday. You're right. This team is definitely good enough that a test, an exhibition of sorts, midseason against the Dodgers, really does sort of just feel like we're taking a break in the middle of the MLB season to do the FA Cup. Like, it doesn't even feel like it'll have a standings impact. It will, but it's a lot like in 2022. Say what you will about that team, smoke and mirrors, Josh Donaldson, Aaron Hicks, you know, Aaron Judge carrying a roster that was poorly constructed. I think the 2024 team and the pitching, it's not even close. I think the 2024 team is so much more legit than the 2022 team. But 2022 team raced out to such a wild record that they had a series with the Astros at the end of June where it was like, we all know the Yankees are going to have to get past the Astros if they're actually going to make noise. They're in a good spot standings-wise. They are looking to set records, not looking to maintain their hold on the East or on the best record in the league as a whole. Let's just see what happens. This is borderline an exhibition. And what happened in that series? Most exciting win of the year, the Aaron Hicks 3-run home run. There was a Judge walk-off at the end of the series. There was an Astros combined no-hitter. That series had everything. And at the end of the day, both teams won 2 games. Nobody really grabbed bragging rights, although the Astros still had the eternal bragging rights of being the team that had continually pushed the Yankees aside in the postseason. But it kind of was just a midseason, like, everybody got theirs. There were excellent performances on both sides. We ended this series exactly where we started it, and now we move on. Now, that team was probably a paper tiger. They collapsed well before they got to the postseason. They rallied in late September. They got that matchup with Houston and were ill-prepared for it and were swept aside. Who knows how this season plays out? it would certainly take a lot of developments for this team to be in as bad a position as the 2022 one was, but you can't rule it out. That said, facing off with the Dodgers this weekend does just sort of feel like MLB put a very – it's like the London series. It's like, does this count? Is this actually in the standings at the end of the year? This matters? Okay, and then I guess we got to, get nervous to an extent. But it does genuinely feel like a fun opponent from, like, the Spanish national team showed up, and now you have to play him three times. Like, Yamamoto, Gavin Stone, Glasnow, that's your three that are lined up. That's going to be fun as hell. And in previous years, I think we would have looked at, up at that and gone, oh, that's daunting. And now I go, all right, bring him on. We'll send our three guys out there. We have the best rotation in the American League. So hopefully Dodger fans, that team is struggling offensively a little bit right now. Hopefully they're looking at us saying we're going on the road to the Yankees. We're the team that spent $700 million this offseason, and we're not confident in our offense, and we're not confident that we can hit to back these hopefully excellent pitching performances. So I think Dodgers fans are more skittish than we are right now. I know they are.
Dodgers suck.
As of now, the Dodgers kind of suck.
No, I mean, it's weird. Like, you look at their team stats and it's like, wow, this is a pretty damn good team. And then you're looking at the production. I think it was like their bottom three in the league against pitches 97 miles an hour or faster in like batting average, on base percentage, expected, weighted on base, whatever the fuck. But that's bad. That's because that's, you know, you're facing a lot of power pitching, you would presume, in the postseason when all hands are on deck. And they can't hit with runners in scoring position, which, I mean, hey, Dodgers fans, we sympathize with that. I mean, this is the first time this team's been doing that in 5 years. I mean, best, our greatest sympathies, but if the Dodgers, I'd be surprised if the Dodgers were to manage to wake up against us this weekend. We'll see. They have a star-studded lineup, so I think that could happen just at any time.
Ohtani's certainly going yard. There's no doubt about
that. Yeah, I mean, Ohtani's fucking unbelievable. 989 OPS, he's batting 322, which is crazy.
That's not the – I mean, who did I predict would homer off us a couple weeks ago, and I was very obviously right.
Oh, shit. Who was that? We always play this game, though.
I mean, I was 100% correct. But, like, saying
Ohtani. You had the Joey Ortiz prediction back
in Joey Ortiz against
Milwaukee.
Joey Ortiz had the game of his life, although he was borderline. If he didn't win it, he was basically rookie of the month in May. So I guess he's just good now. But, I mean, yeah, this is not the same level of prediction as that. But yeah. I would say, yeah, Shohei Ohtani's going to have his fun with the porch.
Abusing the short porch. Abusing it.
It just adds to the feeling that it is an exhibition series, though. Because, like, when Ohtani came in last year, you knew he was going to do something special. He hit that home run to dead center and Judge robbed it. Yeah. It was like, he's going to have a moment like that this weekend, too. He's hopefully going to be – the fans are going to get on him a little bit. I think I don't want the fans to lose sight, and they've been incredible, and they were incredible last night for the Juan Soto basketball jersey. They showed up, like, 2.5 hours early to get in that. That led to not the sole factor, but that definitely emboldened a great environment yesterday. Ohtani's a coward. He ruled the Yankees out of his free agency chase in 2017 before he ruled any other team out because they didn't want to come to a high-pressure environment in New York. Played in a low-pressure environment in Anaheim for many years. Got so bored there that he started placing sports bets. And then when he got caught, he decided to blame his interpreter. And then when the opportunity arose to choose between a Dodgers team that has the best lineup in baseball annually – and endless international influence already, and a Blue Jays team that was right at the fringes of AL East contention, he could maybe have been the difference between contending for a title and falling off the map. He chose the easiest path.
Yeah.
He chose the non-challenge, and he sent all his money into the stratosphere, presumably so that his interpreter couldn't get his hands on it to bet it. Has anyone asked yet if that's why he deferred his money, so that Ipe would have a tougher time getting it out of the account to throw it in FanDuel or DraftKings? Ohtani's a coward. Always has been, always will be. And so he's going to put on a show to an extent this weekend in a game that doesn't really matter much. The exhibition factor of it all definitely benefits his ability to kick his play up a few notches. But I'd love for the fans to make themselves heard. Let him know that you know that he's a coward. I think the Dodgers are going to have a real tough time in Philadelphia, which is hopefully a playoff matchup that we do see. Let this be a preview. Like, Yankee fans, you want to get your reputation back for being tough as nails? Make Ohtani feel it this weekend. Make him wear it. Don't let him think he's coming in here to put on a show. Don't let him think that's why you're here But don't think you're here to just see an interesting game. And whether Ohtani goes 0-for-4, hits two home runs, I'll be excited because I saw one of the greatest. Nope, don't be a wimp. Let him know that you know he's a coward.
Yeah. This Dodgers team, like, they're good. They could obviously win a World Series. Who the fuck is to say they can't? But, like, they're like an Instagram baseball team. You got they are. Like, you look at the lineup, it's all big names. You look
Ohtani was a problem.
Yeah. You got Tyler Glass now, who everybody loves because he's hot. You got Yoshinobu Yamamoto making $325 million. Even like you go down further in the rotation and it's Walker Buehler and James Paxton. Like, it's all just name recognition. It's all stacked with guys that are well known in the realm of baseball. So it's just like, I don't know. Our team's so much cooler. You have Luis Gil doing shit that you've never seen before. You got Anthony Volpe with a breakout rookie season. Like, the Dodgers don't have any players like that. You got Chris Taylor here with a -7 OPS plus. You paid Teoscar Hernandez $28 million to, you know, solid season, pretty okay, but like 247 with a 767 OPS, sure. I don't know. Gavin Lux has been a massive failure for them. I don't know, whatever. Why are we talking about this?
Yeah, 12 minutes talking smacko on the Dodgers instead of talking about the New York Yankees.
I like talking shit on other teams. It's fun.
Yeah.
And like, this is, you know, this is the presumptive World Series matchup, you know, everybody's been penciling in since what, fucking 2016?
What I can't stand is the teams, fans of other teams every year that, like, look, the Dodgers have failed to bring home the hardware a lot. They're always the favorite. And they've won one World Series in 2020. And they're always going to have an incredible regular season. And they're always going to, they're so far have wilted in October and every other year. And when fans in July of other teams say, like, I like our team, but we're going to lose to the Dodgers in the playoffs anyway. And then you reach the Dodgers in the World Series and you beat them. And then you're like, oh my God, I can't believe it happened to us. Like, it's. Grow up, get over yourselves. Like, you can't make fun of the Dodgers for failing in big moments and then also pretend midseason, like, well, it's not even fair because the Dodgers are out there. Like, you know as well as I know that they wilt under pressure a lot. And if you're waving the white flag to the Dodgers so that you can feel like you accomplished something impressive when you beat them, that's embarrassing behavior. And yes, I am looking at the city of Boston, as always.
Yep, whatever. We'll get there, but we got important business right now. For the Yankees, Gerrit Cole rehab start Tuesday. What was it? 3 2/3. He threw 45 pitches, 34 were for strikes. He hit 98 once on the radar gun, mostly sat 94 to 97. Struck out 5 batters, allowed 2 hits, didn't walk anybody. I think he needs a couple more, and that's it. Like, this is the progression that everybody's been hoping for and waiting for. To be honest, I don't know if you can give a better first rehab start than that. I mean, obviously you can. You can no-hit somebody through 4 and be removed. But in terms of what he was dealing – he hasn't thrown since the end of February. That was when Daniel Vogelbach hit that home run, and Blue Jays fans had their fucking fun with that. And then Cole went down with an elbow injury, and that was it. And then after that, it was – rehabbing the elbow, soft throwing, and then gradually getting back up to throwing off a mound, live batting practice, simulated game, whatever. Now he's in it, throwing the hardest he's been in a regular game setting. And yeah, I know it was double A, but you got to factor in the seriousness of this elbow issue. And it's especially concerning because Cole is a power pitcher, and that's always – something that you have to keep an eye on when there is that inflammation or whatever. What was the diagnosis? It was something weird. Either way, like, he's giving it his all on the mat. You know, Matt Blake during his live batting practice told Colia to dial it back a little bit because he was throwing really hard, but that's just how Cole throws. But either way, this is the exact progression that Yankees fans needed to see from here. I know they have largely been mum on his progress before the rehab outing because they didn't want to give anybody ideas of when he might be coming back because these things are tricky. All it takes is one setback and then you're looking at another month out. Yeah. He, in theory, the 60-day IL put him on track to return May 28th.
Yeah, he's already passed. He's already passed that.
So we're not too far off. So the Yankees weren't really that wrong. Did we think he was actually going to return the day after the IL designation let up? Absolutely not. That is literally never the case with a Yankees player. But the target series is the 14th to the 16th of this month against the Red Sox. That's in a week and a half, dude. That's pretty far. Like, that's 2.5 weeks after the target date if all goes well with the next two more rehab starts. And based on the first one that he had, I don't see anything going wrong in the next two, knock on wood. But it's perfect timing as well because you have Clark Schmidt's injury. He's out for 2 months. Cody Poteet can definitely hold down the fort based on what we've seen from him from those first two outings. But he'd much rather have Gerrit Cole here. And then it silences that whole bullpen argument where we were sitting here and we're like, all right, well, who's getting bumped when Cole gets back? Because Schmidt's statistically the second best pitcher. You're not moving Luis Gil out of here. Is it Nestor Cortez? Does that mess up the dynamic? Does that make Nestor mad? Because he demands so much of himself on the mound. As you see with every start, he's been clearly the worst starter out of this group, but now there's some breathing room. If Cole can return in a couple weeks, you have your starting five for the next 6 weeks. Clark Schmidt comes back, then we can have the tough discussion, or maybe it's all laid out for us depending on an injury or someone needing an innings limit or some sort of maintenance. I don't know, but damn, this feels good because Gerrit Cole back with this rotation, getting a few starts in before the All-Star break. You know, continuing to vibe with the guys. Clearly, he's had a great role in influencing them and fostering a good relationship with them. So I'm excited to just see him on the mound, getting those reps in. Hell of a second half for this team coming up when he's completely fresh after the All-Star break.
Yeah, and Aaron Boone saying he needs at least a couple more starts. I would say that's at least two, probably three. But guess what? It was an elbow injury that was so serious this offseason that we were sending him to double-check imaging with the number one scariest doctor in the world, Dr. Neil Eletrash. We were fearing Tommy John. So the longer it takes to build him up and make sure that he is as healthy as possible when he starts, take that time. I would rather start him at home, too. I know there's a Baltimore series right after that I read somebody saying, hey, what about June 20th against the Orioles as a target? I love that. Either way, a 44-19 team right now, their expected win-loss is also 44-19. So they're not playing above their means. Everything about their performance lines up with their record. This is a very good baseball team. Don't look at the Orioles two games out in the loss column and 3.5 back overall. Don't look at the standings. Just look at the quality of play from the Yankees. Think about adding Gerrit Cole into that, and then think about, do we need to rush him? There's been a discussion after every broadcast I've watched for the last couple of days of, you know, he's building up. When he gets to 75 pitches, do you want those 75 pitches in the bigs, or do you want them in the minors? And would you rather have that step come in the bigs, the four innings start at 75 or five innings at 75, or wait till he's built up to 90? I would wait till he's built up much closer to 100. I don't need that abbreviated start coming at the major league level, especially with what the Yankees have now. Controversially, probably not controversial, Nestor Cortez and Cody Poteet ended up next to each other because of where Clark Schmidt was slotted in the rotation. Yeah, that I don't love, and everything's TBD for this weekend for the Yankees so far, so we don't have any pitching matchups. We just have the Dodgers probables. With that off day that they had coming back from the West Coast, I would love if we could jumble that a little bit, just so we've got change of pace guy, flamethrower, change of pace guy. Like, we've got Rodon, we've got Heel to play with, and we've got Marcus Stroman, who is also sort of a change of pace guy. If I could rejigger the rotation a little bit, I wouldn't have Stroman, Poteet, and Nestor back to back to back. But obviously, it's imperfect. You only got one off day to play with. It is what it is. But luck of the draw makes Nestor kind of an easier assignment because you're seeing – yeah, it's like, oh, this is a lefty version of the righty thing I saw last night. Okay, I've got this timed up. Sorry, Nestor. I would love to see one of the rocket arms in there right before Nestor in the rotation. But beggars can't be choosers. I think we would obviously, the way it is right now, Cole gets reinserted into Poteet's spot, and then Cole and Nestor, that's as good as it gets in terms of a change of pace. All things considered, very encouraged by what we saw from Cole to start this week. And all I really needed was clean bill of health, encouraging words. We got all of that. And oh, by the way, we also got two wins at the big league level too. So perfect Tuesday, perfect Wednesday. No arguments for me. And one thing that I think fans should also take note of with regard to Cole's one double A start, who is his catcher? Ben Rice.
Who is it?
It was Ben Rice, prospect number 12, according to Pipeline in the system. People love him. People love the lefty bat. The pedigree's odd. Dartmouth, 12th round pick, 25 years old. I mean, not your typical top prospect. Honestly, impressive that he even ranks 12th in that top 30, because that's the kind of guy that a lot of publications will go, okay, organizational filler. No, we love it. Hey, maybe he gets an opportunity at some point. But I'm not fooled by the stats. He's their 28th best prospect. You've seen that a million times.
Yeah.
Clearly, people believe in Rice. And you know who really believes in Ben Rice? The New York Yankees, who left him at Double A while he was red hot to start the year to catch Gerrit Cole. Cole gave him good reviews. Transcribed, Cole told the press in Somerset, Rice was in meetings all day prepping for the series. He was very impressed by the time he carved out to meet with Cole and make sure that, because catching a rehab assignment is different than catching a start. Cole's side goal was dominating the opposing hitters. His primary goal was mixing up his pitches with enough of a sample size and enough exertion to prove to the Yankees that he was taking the desired steps in his recovery. So Ben Rice trying to win a baseball game, also trying to make the Yankees' most expensive ace feel comfortable, also trying to basically fill out a spreadsheet for the Yankees to go, oh, he got 10 curves in there. Oh, the fastball was popping, and he threw it high, and he threw it low. So great job by Ben Rice, and Cole praised him. Anyway, the literal next day, he was promoted to AAA. So the Yankees were not kidding around when they left him down there to catch Cole. Clearly, they agreed AAA ready, but let's see how he does with this Cole challenge. Oh, he passed it, so let's bump him up. That tells me they have major league faith in Ben Rice. They really believe in the package, and they also want to see him as a catcher. A lot of people are penciling Ben Rice in as, oh, we need a lefty swinging first baseman to replace Anthony Rizzo. We got a guy who's sort of this catcher first baseman hybrid. He's a Double A, now he's a Triple A, he's slugging. Yankees want to exhaust their options at catcher before they move him off, and letting him catch Gerrit Cole in a rehab start is a pretty big endorsement that they're not going to immediately take the position away from him and make him Anthony Rizzo's caddy. So might be the first baseman of the future someday. Austin Wells might be the first baseman of the future someday. Rice and Trevino might share catching duties. I don't know. I'm just the messenger. But they wanted to pair him with Gerrit Cole, and they made that abundantly clear this weekend. Oh, look, he homered and hit a ribby single in his first game at AAA on Wednesday. So you'll be hearing a lot more about Ben Rice in the future.
Yeah, Dartmouth kid, you know, he's definitely always prepared. That's a 6% acceptance rate. Holy shit. You guys want some interesting information about Dartmouth?
Once they accept you, you can't get out because you're kind of in the middle of nowhere.
You are the 6% trapped at Dartmouth. Dr. Seuss and Mindy Kaling are famous alumni.
And Ben Rice also.
And Ben Rice alumni. He should be on this list per Google because his ascension has been Robert Reich went there too. Wow. Look at this.
I got to say, I don't know who that is.
Robert Reich is that socialist Bernie Sanders guy who always gives those like economic discussion. Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on. The baseball socialist fans, we're here. We're here to talk about it. Get in.
How tall do you think Robert Reich is?
5'5".
Oof. 4'11".
No, he's not.
He is. Unless, again, Google is lying, which it always is.
Ben Rice. This is an interesting discussion. Why?
Ben Rice also 4'11", by the way.
Yeah, Ben is slugging 4'11". That's, you know, the second coming of Jose Altuve from the left side of the plate.
Mm-hmm. Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice Bone-In Tender Ribeye Steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Seriously, though, this discussion is notable. Why? Because The Yankees need to figure out their first base situation for next year. Anthony Rizzo's not coming back. I hope you guys know that. I don't know if we have Anthony Rizzo stands on the channel, on the website. I really don't know. The Yankees have talked about cutting payroll, even with getting involved in the Juan Soto market, for months now. It's painfully apparent they are going to try to bring back Juan Soto, but that means they are going to downgrade elsewhere or just get rid of the excess costs. Mm-hmm. Anthony Rizzo represents one of those. Letting him go frees up $11 million. That's a change you just have to make. The defense is not good. The offense is also not good. And I don't know what the free agent market looks like on the first base side of things, but I think it's safe to say that's a fairly deep position that the Yankees are not going to want to invest heavily in. And there's no like generational, the Yankees missed the boat on the generational first baseman 3 years ago when they went with Rizzo over Freddie Freeman, Matt Olson, so on and so forth. They picked the wrong guy in terms of the longevity and the long-term production. They picked the right guy in terms of who Aaron Judge wanted in terms of veteran presence. So, we can't be too upset with the move, but yeah, through 61 games, Rizzo 236, 651 OPS, 85 OPS plus. Again, in the most talented lineup he is ever going to be in. It doesn't get any better than this. So you look at the Ben Rice promotion and whether he's playing catcher, whether he's playing first base, doesn't really matter because then that gives the Yankees options in terms of what they can do. Like you said, Austin Wells, I don't know. Aaron Judge, you floated that in an article this week. I don't know that, you know, you make room for Jason Dominguez at some point this season. Maybe that's something you experiment with. But when you look at cutting costs, when you look at figuring things out for the future, the Ben Rice thing certainly has a conversation that should be surrounding where it's like, okay, something can be up here. I don't know what it is, but something is going on. And I know a lot of the talk here has been like, oh, this could be a Yankees prospect who is like fool's gold, right? Ripping through the minors. Like the Yankees aren't taking him seriously. They're probably not going to use him. They're viewing him as a trade piece of some sort, going to try and upsell him at the deadline. Don't know if that's the case. Probably want to, you know, if he's catching Gerrit Cole in a rehab start, if he's getting bumped to AAA and there's clear intention here, I don't know if that's what they're going to – they could. I think there's a lot of options to go here. But when you look at next year's payroll with them trying to cut down – again, I don't want to talk about this while this team's on fire, but
yeah.
Saving $11 million on Anthony Rizzo, that's happening. Saving $14 million on Gleyber Torres, that is happening. Again, send me all the splice Gleyber Torres stats you want.
They're getting a little splicier, though, I will say. He's a little bit hotter. I think we're – again, that's a benefit of the team surging, is that we can laugh about the Gleyber Torres. Like, he's not having a good season. No matter what you tell me, he just isn't. But the team has been good enough that I can't bring myself
exactly
to really tear my hair out. Last, like, 2.5 weeks, he's actually been playing very well and is showing signs of offensively playing very well.
It's one hit a game. And some of them have intention, some of them don't. Like, he had he's had three multi-hit – oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong thing. He's had one multi-hit game since May 20th. So he's just getting a hit here and there. He's getting a couple RBIs here and here. He's not a driving force whatsoever. He's not lengthening the lineup in the manner that he should be. But he's doing just enough for us to not have a riot about his production. And then you keep going down the list, right? It's like – Verdugo, $9 million. Probably going to free that up if you have Jason Dominguez and you're bringing back Juan Soto. Like, I don't know, again, but Anthony Rizzo is the most glaring example. He is going to be entering his age 35 season. He has a $17 million team option. It's just not a price, not the right price point. So I think people need to start paying a little bit more attention to Ben Rice. And I know there's been a lot of frustration with Austin Wells, right? Like, everyone's sitting there and they're waiting for this bat to wake up. Don't know how long it's going to be. Don't know what the deal is. But, like, you can't deny that he's still getting unlucky. I don't know what the deal is. The strikeouts are a problem. But when he's making contact, he's making good contact. And he's still getting robbed here and there. So I don't know what that turnaround for him is going to look like when the stats normalize. Let's actually check Savant real quick to see if I'm lying, but I've been watching. The eye test is passing it. You know, Expected. Why do they not have the numbers here? This is great. Mm-hmm. Do we not have enough at bats?
Well, they knew you were going to the page, so they deleted it.
36 games. This should be 121 plate appearances. This should be enough. It's like all, it's all blurred out. I don't know. Walk percentage high, sweet spot high, expected weighted on base percentage high-ish, expected batting average middle, expected slugging middle. Because the barrel and average exit velocity and hard hit can improve, but I don't know. Seems like when I'm watching him, like, it's there, and he's just one little tweak away from going on that streak that he needs to. But, again, a luxury right now. We don't have to shit our pants over Austin Wells not meeting expectations in year two, or technically year one, because he was only up for a month last year, because the rest of the team is performing so well. But worth keeping these discussions alive and well, noting what's going to happen. But, yeah, first base situation needs to be solved potentially by October. They need to have some sort of roadmap. This is the way that they're going to do it, apparently.
And Rizzo should be a good enough teammate that if he remains a liability as the year drags on, that he'll be committed to finding a solution too, because he wants a ring. He does not want to be the first baseman on a team that falls short, partially because of his poor performance. He wants a ring. He's a borderline co-captain here. So if he still has a 600 OPS in mid-July, if he agitates and is like, no, I'm not moving off the position, you can't improve this, you can't do anything to me, you can't move me, I'm a rock, I'm an island, then the Yankees have a problem. But for now, they're able to keep playing him at first base. They're able to keep thinking about it and hoping he does turn a corner, like James Rousen said. The people who have their eyes on the lineup every night and are doing like, where's Wells when Trevino starts or whatever, you're on my list, by the way. You're on my shit list. There's this team that's 44-19. If you're like, man, Austin, I saw the other day a bunch of people being like, Austin Wells doesn't get the same luxury as, you know, such and such. When he has a bad game, he always gets benched. It's like backup catchers. I mean, that's how catching works. Like it has nothing to do. They were like, I think it was Oswaldo. They're like, why does Oswaldo get to hit for himself, but Austin Wells gets pinch hit for? It's like, can you just, it's working, right? It's working. So can we not quibble with that? That said, that's a good way to introduce our 35-minute segment on Dennis Santana called Quibbling with Dennis Santana. No, we are not going to talk about Dennis Santana for that long. He's the only bummer of the series. He's got to go. I mean, the fact that we're being precious with a roster spot just because we don't want to rock the boat and DFA somebody if we don't have to. I mean, the Ron Marinaccio is a triple A. Jack Neely is below and off the 40-man roster. Both of those people would be more helpful than Dennis Santana. I mean, enough is enough. The last guy in your bullpen doesn't have to be some exceptional, you know, magical dragon who floats above the, you know, I don't expect a mop-up guy to seamlessly erase three innings. But Dennis Santana, solidly the worst part of this team. It's kind of unbelievable he still survived into June. An unsung hero of this series so far. Is Michael Tompkins sick with it? Because his ninth inning was exactly what I want a mop-up guy to be. 9-5 lead, technically no longer even, I wouldn't even call that mop-up. I would call that a borderline save. It's just one run beyond a save. And you don't want to bring in Holmes, who they stayed away from in the opener and stayed away from. Yeah, I wouldn't say staying away from him yesterday was an indicator that something is wrong, because game was 9-2 and then game was 9-4 and then it was 9-5 on an out. So it's not like the bases were juiced at 9-6 and they went with Tonkin. But you want to use the belly of the bullpen in a game like that, especially after using Canely in Hamilton, who looks better now, and Weaver in the opener. And so they go to the guy whose job it is to do that, Dennis Santana, and sloppy, sopping wet batting practice for a couple innings. But Michael Tonkin, sharp. He gets Royce Lewis immediately, who is somebody who has tormented this team and is probably going to torment them again tonight, because Derek Jeter is his hero and he's a really good baseball player and probably be a top 20 MLB player next year. That's his trajectory. I love that dude. But Tonkin comes in and starts him off. Okay, you've been a little too comfortable. Here's some sort of 94-mile-an-hour fastball boring from the inside part of the plate all the way in on your hands, and your bat exploded, and you're so demoralized you're not even going to run to first, and you're going to let Michael Tonkin, who, by the way, I love Michael Tonkin in Boogie Nights. He was so great. He was so good in that movie. just ends the game, and he's my unsung hero of the series. I mean, Rodon and Heel deserve to be spoken about at length. But good job. Michael Tongan and Dennis Santana were already trading spots on the DFA ladder. Now it's like Tongan is putting his foot on the ground. He's barely even on that DFA ladder. And Dennis Santana broke the ladder. He's at the top of the ladder hanging off it.
Yeah. And you look at Ron Marinaccio's stats at AAA, 11 games, 7 games finished, 3 saves, 1.17 ERA, 17 strikeouts, and 15 and a third innings. That's good for a 0.91 whip. Why isn't he here? Again, don't need it. I do believe in having that wasteful guy we're up 9-2, fucking, I don't care. Go in for 2 innings, give up 3 runs, I don't care. But Dennis Santana has now been consistently bad, nearly blew the game on Sunday that the Yankees had an epic comeback to win against the Giants. He's not serviceable anymore. And there's no reason to not have Ron Marinaccio in this bullpen because it's not like he's getting less work at AAA. Like, what's the goal with him? To have him just at Scranton hanging out? Speak to me on that, Aaron Boone. I'd love to know more. If he's not getting rest there, if he's not getting, I'm at a loss. I don't know what the solution is. If he should be at the big league roster, getting these better innings to better prepare himself for what's to come in the second half of the season and in the postseason. I don't know what him hanging out in Scranton has to do with anything. My unsung hero, however, and this is for everybody who loves to give me shit, it's going to Gleyber Torres because, man, he did some things. Homers in the second inning in the first game to put the Yankees up 1-0. I know it was a porch job, but guess what? Play the fucking game. Hit it over the porch. Do it for me. And then the second game, last night, ground rule double, makes it 4-0 in the first. Big difference between 2-0 and 4-0, folks. Don't have to tell you how math works, but that is doubling the score in the first inning against Chris Paddock, who the Yankees demoralized in the previous outing in Minnesota. These types of offensive performances, getting your team out to an early lead, punching the opponent in the mouth, takes a ton of the pressure off the starters. I think that's a big reason why Carlos Rodon was able to dominate last night. I think it's a big reason why Luis Gil has constantly felt comfortable on the mound, despite still only being a rookie. So Gleyber's got it for me. Everyone's still focusing on the pitching dominating, which, again, yes, deserves great conversation. Yeah. Everyone's still focused on Aaron Judge tearing the cover off the ball. But Torres, for as underwhelming he's been this year, came up big in these two spots early in the game, deserves credit.
Yeah, in a 4-0 lead in the first inning yesterday, it's like, again, the Twins series start, and it feels like every series this year operates this way. You're like, hey, at one point they're going to have a bad series. I hope it's not this one, but you never know. And then the first game happens, and it's Luis Gil, and it's fairly tight, and there's a late Lewis homer. And you're like, are they going to squander it? Sten goes yard. They don't. And then you're like, all right, well, it's going to be tough to win. This series hinges on this one. Let's see how they do. And they come out, just take that 4-0 lead, and you're like, oh, they're going to win this one too. Oh, great. Like, almost immediately, you're like, all right, so the tough series won't be this one. Victory, again, is almost naturally assured. And I have not felt that way in a long time. 4-0 lead is my least favorite lead. If there's one thing I can communicate to the listeners of the Yanks Go Yard podcast, it's that I despise a 4-0 lead. I'd rather be up 3-0. 4-0 is the first lead where it feels like, all right, this is a win. Like, it's the first, it's the lowest amount of runs you can be up where you're like, this is a win. 3-0, you're like, all right, nice lead, sizable, but you're a couple hits away from this being interesting. 5-0, you're like, this is borderline a wrap. 4-0, you start getting confident, but it's closer to 3-2 than it is to 5-6. It feels like you let up a little bit, you give up 2 hits, and all of a sudden it's a 4-1 game. There's runners on, there's a runner on third. I've seen the Yankees blow so many 4-0 leads over the years. It's very insecure. But this year, I just knew Rodon was going to carry that through for a while until the team extended it. And oh, Aaron Judge with the bases loaded triple. That was the moment probably a lot of people were the happiest. Also the moment that Aaron Judge kicked the catcher's glove into the stratosphere.
That was hilarious.
Easily the funniest moment of the series. But the moment I was happiest was the Stanton homer, just because obviously it lets you exhale a little bit. Luke Weaver has the easiest ninth inning of all time after that. But the adjustment he made from 0-1 Caleb Fielbar curve to 0-2 Caleb Fielbar curve, he got an 0-1 curve and he looked silly. How much longer did he have to adjust to that curve? Not long. Thielbar went back to it on the next pitch, almost in the same location. Stanton stepped off the plate a little bit, took an inside curve, 430 feet, the most classic Stanton home run you'll ever see, and it ended the game. It took a game that was going to hang in the balance in the ninth, and it ended the game. So big exhale, shout out to Giancarlo Stanton, the tone setter once again. And I don't know how much longer he's going to be on this team, because they are going to hopefully sign Juan Soto long term, and they are going to have Jason Dominguez, and Spencer Jones will hopefully start making a case for himself soon, and reps are going to need to open up. But it's no longer this cut and dried, man, we got to get rid of Stanton. And how are we going to do it? Who's going to take that money? And while he's here, what does he do? And I guess maybe he'll just get hurt. He has 15 homers this year. He's the first, a member of the first Yankee trio to ever hit 15 plus homers in their first 62 games of the season. He's having an awesome start to the year. And he's also been Johnny on the spot, Gianni on the spot, whatever. Whenever they
Gianni
on the spot, like for line drive single up the middle yesterday, gets the scoring rolling.
And makes fucking rocket too.
It's always rockets, and a lot of them are staying in the ballpark, and a lot of them are crucial hits. The one in San Francisco to keep that rally going, like in length in the lead in the ninth for Clay Holmes. Stanton maybe having the most joyful season of anyone. I mean, yeah. Juan Soto, Aaron Judge, come on. Just come on. I mean, perfect 2 months stretch. Or Judge has somehow had 2 months worth of production in a perfect 1 month stretch. And Juan Soto's had an absolutely perfect 2 months. But Stanton's the one who makes me happiest just because of everybody who wrote him off. And they weren't incorrect to write him off. Yeah. And yet, here we are. And I know you wanted to give love to Stanton as well as another key Yankee.
I have to give love to Stanton. This is we'll put the ticker up here because, again, I have criticized him a lot. And I think it's been low hanging fruit for so long. Right. It's like, oh, yeah, of course you can zone in on the guy. But the guy who makes, you know, $300 and something million and is not on the field. But like that drastically affected the Yankees' future plans. It kept them out of the running for some free agents. And it was a frustrating time over the last 4 years when you're not getting the production that you need or he's going down at the worst possible time. And look, that could still happen this year. All it's going to take is a tweaked hamstring, knock on wood. But there are a couple of situations on this team right now where guys who should be producing because of the protection in this lineup are not. And Giancarlo Stanton is taking it to the next level. And though he might not be getting all the clutch hits or he might not be kickstarting all these offensive rallies, his additive nature with his power, with his presence in the box, and with his padding the leads later in games or whenever it is creating another dynamic on this team that, again, they haven't had. Yankees over the last 4 years, they get a lead in early in the game, and then that's it. You know, you go up 3-0 in the first, and then the Yankees go down in order from innings 2 through 8. And it's like, what are we doing here? So far this year, they've been picking each other up and supplementing the runs that they have been getting early in the game. And Giancarlo Stanton's been a massive part of that. But happiest moment for me, I don't know why, but I am having a renaissance with triples. I fucking love triples, man. Anthony Volpe, another one last night, and it's great listening to the broadcast when there is an entertaining play like that, because there are so many slow guys, so many unathletic guys on this roster, and you never have the excitement of like, ball's in the corner, he's going for two, he's making it, he's going for three, oh, he's gonna make it. And it's like, it livens the broadcast, it makes it a lot more fun. Anthony Volpe, 6 triples on the year, busting his ass on the base paths, playing great defense. And I'm gonna cryptically call out the blog of teenagers that called me out for criticizing Gleyber Torres.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, we're concerned about Anthony Volpe's ex WOBA when he's hitting 290 with an 803 OPS and a 127 OPS.
Enjoy baseball. Enjoy baseball.
Yeah. It's just like Anthony Volpe is the definition of passing the eye test this year. Last year, he was not. Last year, you looked at the stats and you were like, oh, that's actually not bad, a 2020 season. But it's like, if you watched every night, it was like, this was not a good season. And he didn't need to have a good season last year. But if you're looking at the numbers at face value, you can't look at 2020 and be like, that's a success. Anthony Volpe will tell you last year was not a success for him. Everybody on the Yankees team with high demands in terms of play would tell you that was not a success for him. This year, the definition of a success. Defense has improved drastically. Patience at the plate. spraying the ball to all fields, hitting for contact and not trying to, you know, launch angle everything, which is clearly what he was trying to do last year, whether it was intentional or not. The leaps and bounds he's made, 58 strikeouts in 62 games this year. I know that he's still striking out a little bit, but he had 167 in 159 games last year, and it felt like way more than that. OBP, you know, he's getting he has 23 walks in 62 games. He had 52 all of last year in 159 games. So he's on pace to increase that by what, 15%, something like that. I don't know. Numbers are trending to levels where we need them to be. He's taking advantage of the padding in the lineup and the protection in the lineup to even have a faint criticism about his game that isn't more of that isn't part of a larger discussion in terms of like maybe his overall batted pro. We're going to look at one stat and say, oh, you know, the expected weighted on base percentage since May 2nd actually isn't suitable. Fuck that. Shut up. Get a life.
I mean, my favorite, I'm searching through this Twitter account. I've realized a new pet peeve I have in terms of online phrases. When somebody makes a point and they don't want to debate it and they also want to sound demeaning in response, they'll say something, 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 comma, man. Have you noticed that? This teenage blog cited Gleyber Torres' last 144 plate appearances just as like a stamp, put a stamp on it. He's good. It's over. And they end the tweet. He's just a good player, man. Like, yeah. Again, talking to the audience, sure. Talking to a person, like that's a tweet meant for everyone who reads it. Just like, he's a good player, man. Oh no, can't come back from that. Don't man me.
I'm not your fucking man.
Don't man me. There was a discussion on the broadcast yesterday. I don't remember if it was Flaherty or Kay. Flaherty's been weird lately, by the way. I guess A-Rod hates him. He hates A-Rod. there was a discussion after the Volpe triple of somebody was sort of just like, I think the difference is Volpe always leaves the box smelling a triple, and a lot of hitters don't. And if more hitters did, there would be more triples. But Volpe's just never turning a blind eye to the idea of a triple. He's leaving the box going, can I extend this to three bags? And more often than not, he can. Weird stat flash yesterday, though, where I think they meant shortstops because they said Volpe has the most triples and Volpe and Bobby Witt have the most triples in the American League. Jarren Duran has 9 triples. Volpe has
6. Yeah, Jarren Duran's like going to set a record.
Yeah, Volpe has 6. Or it might even be 5 and Witt has 6. Volpe has 6. So they put that up yesterday and they're like tied for most triples in the American League. It's like, no, Jarren Duran is like running away with that crown. So not true, but that doesn't mean Anthony Volpe isn't very good.
Yeah. And Gleyber Torres, like, again, I think he's a talented player.
He's a talented player, man.
He has 4 multi-hit games since April 30th. That's over a month. That's 6 weeks. You know, that's not that. Yes, he's I understand he has talent. I understand he has flashed the an incredible ability to hit for power, hit for average, and be a really good defender when his mind's in the game. But if you're a really fucking good player, you don't have 4 multi-hit games in a span of 6 weeks. If we want to look at what Anthony Volpe's been doing and we want to, you know, have criticized that, he has 11 multi-hit games over the same span. So he has tripled 3 times 4.
But he has only 4 X multi-hit games.
Yeah. Expected multi-hit games.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, like, again, Gleyber Torres, talented player. We need more out of him. No one's saying he's a bad baseball player. All anybody's saying is that there's a lot left to be desired here. Clearly something's holding him back, whether it's a mental aspect of the game, whether I don't know. Again, I'm not in there. I'm not Gleyber Torres. I would love somebody to ask him a tough question about that so he can elaborate on what might be going on, because if you're looking at, even if you're looking at his last 140 plate appearances, right, since April 30th, he was batting .220 with a .550 OPS. Since then, he's been heating up, right? .231 with a .648 OPS. So he's bumped his OPS up 98 points, which I guess is to be expected because his slugging was so bad that like even a semblance of extra base hits added to his resume would naturally increase that by at least 75 points. His average has gone up 11 points in 6 weeks. I mean, I don't – and his OBP has gone up 13, 12. Yeah. So he's just slugging a tad more, and now we're talking about him being a really good player, man. Just I don't know, do something else.
It's just the definition of goes beyond the box score. It's probably mental, but you can't just give me he's a good player, man, and quote me sample sizes without talking to me about how his production disappeared after he was shopped at the 2022 trade deadline. Disappeared. That's mm-hmm. mental. He was dominant in the playoffs in 2019. It looked like, and in 2020 with the empty stadium playoffs, but he looked like somebody who stepped up when the lights got brighter. And the last couple of years has done the exact opposite. He has receded when the lights have gotten brighter, although the Yankees have had fewer long playoff runs. But 2022 was definitely a year where I was like looking to Gleyber Torres to carry us, remembering how important he'd been in 2019 and 2020. And he hit 158 in a crucial series against Cleveland and 200 in a crucial series against Houston and had no home runs in either series and was awful. So again, someone who once was an intangible, dominant playoff performer disappeared. And I know playoffs are a small sample size, but he had also had a mental reset midseason in 2022 and could never get back to it after being put on the trade block.
Yeah.
So which Torres do we see this year down the stretch, and which Torres do we see this year in the playoffs? Is it the version who is completely at ease like he was in 19 and 20, or is it the version who is preoccupied with his own future and is in his own head? I'm not there. I don't know. I'm not talking to Gleyber Torres. I'm not getting a confession, but I've watched him be dominant in the playoffs, and I've watched him have a year interrupted by trade rumors and then recede in the playoffs. So somebody has to get him on the right path. I know it's in there, but I know I haven't seen it in a while, and the defensive miscues this year only add to my fear that, again, something is off with the mental chemistry, and he is bought in, but he needs to participate sooner rather than later. Big play yesterday to save at least a base runner and retiring Carlos Correa on that grounder up the middle, trading the run for the out. That ended up being sneakily huge. Although, again, only sneakily huge if you're like me and you're freaking out at 9-5 in the eighth. But still, amazing play and sort of allowed them to come to a nice cushiony finish rather than nerve-wracking one. I mean, it's 3:00, done an hour show. I feel like we got to sign off, but much love to Luis Gil. Love to Carlos Rodon. I mean, anybody else you want to give love to from the first couple of games of this series before we sign off?
I think I kissed everybody's ass. But DJ LeMahieu, 3 walks over the last 2 games.
Your boy Willie Castro, obviously, got to send
the worst player I've ever seen. I mean,
probably the worst outfielder in the world, and I don't know what's going on out there, but I do appreciate it. I hope it keeps going.
Yeah, I mean, his batting stats are actually not bad, but yeah, we saw him in Minnesota with those ghastly errors in center field, and then lets that Judge hit the wall and then ricochet past him that allowed Judge to get the triple.
You want to talk about guys who maybe were not thinking triple? I don't think Aaron Judge was thinking triple upon contact there. And then he was like, where's Willie Castro? Where's the ball? Okay, let's just keep this going.
Yeah. No, I gave my love to everybody. And I can't, you know, Carlos Correa, season high 9, Carlos Correa. Season high 4. He struck out 4 times that first game, right?
And that probably will hold. That'll probably be season high till end of season.
Yeah. Carlos Rodon, season high 9 strikeouts. He had the perfect game through 5 1/3. Ended up with 100 pitches through 6. Yeah. I mean, it's great. Great showing. One thing we do have to maybe look at is the Yankees struck out 11 times last night. I didn't even realize that.
I didn't either.
I did not realize that 11 times, but I don't even give a shit. Exactly. That's why I'm happy. I don't need to worry about that box score stat, because guess what? They scored 9 runs. Mm-hmm. They got 9 hits. They walked 6 times. If you're going to strike out a ton, this has to be the trade-off. Beautiful. But yeah, Luis Gil. Did we mention we swept all the fucking monthly awards? It was Aaron Judge, player of the month for the AL. Luis Gil, rookie and pitcher of the month for the AL. And then just to add it all in, Juan Soto wins player of the week in that May 27th to June 4th. Or I can't do it.
No, math.
June 2nd.
June 3rd. May 26th to June 2nd.
Yeah. So complete fucking AL sweep. That's it. Everybody knows. Everybody knows I love these guys.
Nobody doesn't know. Everybody knows. Yeah, Rodon, again, bully ball yesterday. 5 1/3 perfect innings, goes off the rails after the long layoff, and they score all those runs in the top bottom half of the previous inning. And then still needs one more big pitch to get out of it. There's a runner on third and two outs. Got a good hitter at the plate. 0-2 to 3-2. He tries three sliders for some reason. And then he goes, all right, I got maybe one or two more pitches in me. I'm going to throw another heater at the top of the zone. Tops it. Here's a fastball. See it. Hit it if you can. Couldn't. Ground it over to second. Ends the inning. So, like, one more bully ball pitch. Just like, okay, yeah, 99. This is hurting a little bit. I don't know how much more I have, but I know I have enough to do this. And he goes ahead and, yeah, dismisses one more batter, gets the big win, just 2 earned runs, 9 Ks through 6. Let's get the K numbers up, get the expectations police off our backs a little bit. Let's go, Yankees. Let's win tonight. Let's make the Dodgers weekend takeover moot. Let's hit Yoshinobu Yamamoto around a little bit on Friday. That could be fun. I'm going to be on the West Coast this weekend in Oakland. Hopefully talk to a couple former Yankees, have some content for you. Maybe some video content, maybe some written content. Who knows? World's my oyster, I guess. And we'll see you next Monday right here live at 2 o'clock. But stay tuned to the website in the meantime and the Twitter feed, which is Yanks Go Yard FS on Twitter. I'm Adam Weinreb on that platform at Adam Weinreb. Actually, the at sign is important because otherwise you're just typing my name. Thomas Carinante, where can the people find you?
At me, Tommy's underscore takes. Like Adam said, Yanks Yard Twitter account. We're there, yanksyard.com. Plenty of content. Please like and subscribe to the YouTube channel if you're having a good time with us. Pop in here and there. You don't have to stay the whole time. Pop in, drop a comment, ask a question. We're having a good time. We're glad you guys are too. Remember, DraftKings promo code Yanks Go Yard for $150 in bonus bets if you place a $5 bet, win or lose. Pretty good deal. Have a good weekend. Let's go, Yanks. Kick the Dodgers out of town. They're cold. Here we go.
Oof. Let's go, New York Yankees. It's fun. We love our team. We'll see everybody on Monday. Go Yankees, beat the Dodgers. Have a little fun.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.